The following slideshow on the various birds you might find around Holden Village or in the Railroad Creek Valley was created by Greg Woodley. The second part of this presentation is narrated by Jeff Townsend.
The village name. Our first bird is the ruby-crowned kinglet. This bird is about the size or a little smaller than a chickadee, and is very obvious in the winter months when it seems to be around the most. And the ruby-crowned kinglet is named because the male has a ruby or red crown on the top of its head. The female has no marking whatsoever. We can assume this is a female, as the male and female of this particular species are very similar. This little bird feeds on the insects on the outer fringes of branches of old willows and pines, and well, it just seems to do very well, and like I said, it's here year-round. The male ruby-crowned kinglet has a beautiful melodious song in the spring, which is the only time you hear it. The golden crown has very little, it seems, to sing about, so you don't hear it that often. The red-breasted nuthatch is the only nuthatch I have seen in the valley. Others have claimed to see the white-breasted nuthatch. I just haven't seen it, so I'm not denying that it's here. They are told apart from the fact that the red-breasted nuthatch has a black stripe through its eye and a red line above that with a black cap, and also commonly has a rufous or red breast, but not always. Several of the species up here have a white breast, and I sometimes think that is where the confusion has come in, separating these species. This bird will start at the upper part of a tree trunk and will work its way down head first, searching for insects. The brown creeper has habits similar to the red-breasted nuthatch, except that it starts at the base of a tree and works its way up, pulling insects out of crevices and bark, and not really much of a singer. You hear it going real tiny yanks, but not like the red-breasted, which goes yank, 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 has a very loud call. Another bird that stays year-round is the mountain chickadee, very easily identified from other chickadees by the black line through its eye and a white line above that and then a black cap. Very friendly chickadee, song similar to the black-capped chickadee, which is more common elsewhere, but a little wheezy and more hoarse than the black-capped chickadee. The mountain chickadee is the most common chickadee of the valley. I thought we had a couple other slides of chickadees, but I don't, so let me just mention before I talk about this particular bird, we also have a chestnut-backed chickadee, which is the second most common, and a beautiful little chickadee, and the black-capped chickadee. This particular bird is the dark-eyed junco. Used to be called the Oregon junco, and I prefer that name. I don't know why, but the common name right now is dark-eyed junco. It is another year-round resident. It seems to prefer ground feeding, and very easy to tell from other birds in that it has this dark head region, and then the rest of its body is kind of russet and gray, and the white tail coverts are entirely white, so if you ever see it flying away from you, you notice two white flashes on each side of its tail. A pretty good sign that it's a junco. No other bird in the valley except for Townsend solitaire, which is lots larger, have that white outer tail covert. The stellar jay is a very common bird, although not seen so much in the summer as it is heard. In the winter, it's very common around compost area, any bird feeding stations. I had a bird feeding station at the outside of our school window last year when I taught the high school, and we really enjoyed the stellar jays, the chickadees, the nuthatches, the creepers. There was all kinds of birds that came up, and it was a lot of fun. The stellar jay is a nuisance to other birds. It has a tendency to just go to their nest and break their eggs for no reason at all. It also is beneficial to us in that it eats, it's a scavenger, so it'll go around and pick up garbage or what have you. And usually if one finds a good feeding area, there is more than likely going to be other stellar jays close behind. Notice the crest used to communicate with other jays, stellar jays, and the angle that that crest is on its head will tell another jay how the one particular jay is feeling. A black-billed magpie are not very commonly seen, but they have been seen near the compost area on occasion and coming through the village. Another scavenger of the roadways, a very obvious bird along the Columbia River Road, very good for cleaning up road kills and things like that. So these birds are important to have around for that purpose. A common raven, excuse me for this slide, it's not that great, is the only all-black bird of the valley. We don't have any crows. They are all common ravens, as far as I know. Very common up around the compost area and the garbage area up in the tailings. Usually don't see very many of them, maybe two or three at the most. Another important bird for scavenging. In fact, these birds have been widely researched for their ability to communicate. Once one raven has found a, for instance, a deer carcass, it takes only about an hour and a half to 2 hours before you have quite a congregation of ravens. So they're considered very social birds as well as very intelligent birds. One of several woodpeckers of the valley is the downy woodpecker, which is about, well, is small in comparison to most woodpeckers, and I can't think of the dimensions right now. However, it notice the bill is about half as long as its head, and also notice the red patch. The red patch indicates that this woodpecker is a male woodpecker, and the shortness of the bill and the smaller size of the body will tell you that it is a downy woodpecker, easily confused with another woodpecker that I'll show you in just a couple slides. This is a picture of the female downy woodpecker. Notice again, the bill is about half the length of the skull, or of the head, and there's no red patch. And also notice the tail coverts, which are the feathers on the outside of the tail. And they are white, and notice there is a black spot. In fact, there are several, but there's one that you can see for sure. That is a good way to separate the downy woodpecker from the hairy woodpecker if you're close enough. But if you're that close, you'll notice the bill, and it won't be any problem. This is the hairy woodpecker, and this is a male hairy woodpecker. Notice the bill is about as long as its head, and maybe even a little longer. Notice also that it is larger in size if you compare it to a downy, and that the white outer tail covert has no black markings on it. Both of these woodpeckers, like most woodpeckers, feed in the bark, pecking away at different angles to distract insects and grubs. Another thing I might mention about the woodpeckers is that in the spring you hear a lot more pounding than is normal, and this is not so much to gather insects nor to build a home, but it is they find an area that really resonates their sound. For instance, they will hammer away at metal shutters, at creosoted telephone poles, which there's probably not any dead insects if you really thought about it. That's why they're treated, and thus what they're doing is calling their mate and staking out a territory, and most woodpeckers do this. Here we have a red-tailed hawk, the only hawk that I have positively identified in this valley, and I haven't really seen any others. So if you see a hawk, you can be pretty sure in this valley that it's a red tail, especially if it's around Martin's Ridge or flying up around Copper Mountain. If the sun hits it just right, even at a high elevation, you'll notice the redness of its tail and a black stripe on its chest or breast, and that's the distinguishing marks of a red-tailed hawk, plus its call. And you need to listen to the tapes to hear that, but it's very, very evident, and a red-tailed hawk's call is very much just that hawk's and no others. Feeds mostly on ground squirrels, mice, voles, marmots, I would suppose. The marmot is fairly large, but I suppose the red tail would feast on that if it had the opportunity, and pikas, I'm sure. And there is one pair that have been nesting up here a couple of years, and they nest up on Martin's Ridge, and we see them quite often. I failed to mention that the stellar jay is almost a perfect imitator of the red-tailed hawk. Stellar jays are known, in fact, most jays are known for their mimicking ability, and the ones in our valley seem to prefer to mimic the red-tailed hawk. So if you hear a red-tailed hawk call, be sure that you look around and see it before you put it down on your list. Another year-round visitor and common visitor of the compost area is the red crossbill. This is the male, is the red one. The female is kind of an orange-reddish color, but notice the tip of their bill. It is definitely crossed, and that's how they got their name. This is a special adaptation for extracting seeds from pine, fir, and spruce cones. You can tell also if the what the next year's population is going to be of crossbills by the success of the seed rate the year before, because if there's a high seed success rate of the conifers, then the crossbill will reproduce accordingly. We also have a white-winged crossbill in the valley, which you don't see quite as often. The only difference between that and this and the red crossbill is two white wing bars on its wing. They are often seen in the top of conifers wherever there's cones, and I have often in the winter seen congregations of up to 15 crossbills on the peak of a conifer, and it's a beautiful sight on a, when there's a clear blue sky and the sun's out. Another year-round resident of the valley is the white-tailed ptarmigan. This bird is closely related to the grouse family. It is has a specialized adaptation in that it molts twice. Once in the fall, it molts to an all-white. So when the snow is around, it is fairly invisible almost to predators. And then again in the late winter, early spring, it molts to the color that you see here, which is kind of a blend of brown and grays and whites, which better enables it to hide up on the high tundras where it seems to, where it prefers to nest. It's a high altitude bird. You might see it up in Cloudy Pass and Lyman Lake region, and in the winter it is seen around Heart Lake. Very friendly, or at least not very afraid of people, so you can get as close as the person got that took this picture. The pine grosbeak is not real common as far as actually seeing it, but it can be seen along the Heart Lake Trail. I've had better luck in the winter when the deciduous trees have lost their leaves when it comes to identifying this particular grosbeak. So named for the large bill, gross being the German word for large or big. The female, this is the male, the female is an orange-reddish color, very similar in color to the female crossbill. Now we're going to get into the birds that are summer residents or migrants that only stay in the valley from the middle of April until kind of maybe early to late October at the latest. That's usually the range that the birds are here that are migrants. The barn swallow is one of four swallows of the valley, and it's the last one to arrive. But it's the most common, well, not the most common, but the most obvious. It is often seen when you're at coffee break on the electric lines, power lines, along with another swallow, which we will see on the next slide. The barn swallow will make its nest under eaves in barns. Obviously, that's where its name came from. Most any place where there's a little bit of shelter overhead, because obviously, if the rain hit their mud-made nest, it wouldn't last long. And their nest is made out of straw, dried grass, roots, and a mud mixture which they mix with their saliva and patch up to the wall, and very adhesive, I'd say. Another common swallow of the valley is the tree swallow, often seen in groups with the barn swallow on the power lines. The tree swallow is obvious. As you look at it, its breast is all white, and its back is kind of a greenish sheen, kind of a bluish green. There is another swallow of the valley called the violet green swallow, which is very similar to the tree swallow, except that on the lower back, it has white bands that almost meet at the back with just a tiny line of coloring So if you see that type of a combination, it's the violet-green swallow. And we also have a northern rough-winged swallow, which is not seen as often. And you may need to check your field guide for the identification of that one. The brown-headed cowbird is very obvious and friendly in the summer, especially during coffee breaks. It's always around picking up tidbits. It's a nuisance, though, not so much to the people at coffee break, but to the warblers, the vireos, and the song sparrows of the valley. And it's a nuisance because the female cowbird, of which this is not, this is the male, this is a slide of the male cowbird, the female is the same size, but it is more of a dull gray-brown color. And wherever you see the male, you'll see the female close behind. And why will you see her wherever you see the male? Because the female doesn't have any household duties. She doesn't raise her own young. She will go to warblers' nests or vireos or song sparrows and lay her eggs in their nest and hope that that mother will take care of them. Well, the two things happen then. Either the nesting bird will identify that egg as not her own and will build another nest on top of that nest, of which a yellow warbler has been known to do that 13 times. I don't think she ever did have time to raise her own family with all the nest building. Or the nesting bird will not identify or will not worry about the cowbird egg. And then the result is that the cowbird egg will hatch. The cowbird young is larger than the others, will eat more, is more gregarious, will kick the others out of the nest, and will usually be the lone survivor of that nesting period. I have witnessed in Miner's Village a pair of yellow warblers feeding a young cowbird, and there were no sign of other yellow warblers, young yellow warblers in the area, so that was one indication of the destruction that these cowbirds can do. One of three hummingbirds of the village area is the rufous hummingbird. This is the most common and also the most aggressive of the three hummingbirds. This is the male. Notice the rufous coloring on it. Well, you can't notice it on its back, but it's very rufous on the back, on the tail, on the sides, and on the forehead. This is the male, as I said, because you look at the kind of a bib effect under the bill, which can be anything from a green to a bright red to a purple when the sun hits it. These are iridescent feathers. The female will not have that bib effect. If it just has some light brown streaks, very sparsely situated with the white neck feathers, and also is green, but it does have a slight bit of rufous down around the tail. This is the most rare hummingbird of the valley. This is the black-chinned hummingbird. I've seen it a few times around the feeders. I failed to mention, I think, that a lot of the chalets have hummingbird feeders, so if you want to enjoy watching hummingbirds, make sure you look at the different feeders around. Mostly you'll see rufous hummingbirds. Occasionally you'll see the black-chinned hummingbird. It is more green on its back, even the male, and has the black chin with a slight purple band below that, and then a sharp contrast with white feathers. The smallest hummingbird of the United States, and one that you see occasionally in the miner's village, I know of two nesting in the miner's village, is the calliope or the calliope hummingbird. And this is the male, and notice the kind of fire-like flicks on its bib area, or its neck, and there's white in between that. You can't mistake this for any other hummingbird, because it's green on the back and has the red or purple flaming feathers if the sun hits it just right on the underside of the bill. And it's very small, and it is often seen in the miner's village. If you notice it on a dry twig of a tree, and then it disappears, if you stay in that area, it will come right back to that exact same spot, because it is going around its territory checking to make sure no other of the same species are coming close. Many birds will do this, will pick an obvious perch for their nesting area, for their territory displays. And if it does not have such a perch, it often will pass up a very good nesting area in search of a place that can have a boundary area. The Casson finch is the only finch we've identified other than a goldfinch up in the valley, but oftentimes people will look at this very hard and think they see a house finch, but they're really mostly Casson finches. They're all Casson finches up here. The Casson finch is a frequent inhabitant of the compost area and of the salt lick behind Chalet 3. The male has a bright head, and red down on its breast, and the female is more of a drab-looking female-type sparrow appearance. Very beautiful song in the spring and the summer is given by the male Casson finch. Notice the bill is a definite finch bill. Some of my favorite birds are the woodland warblers, and this is the yellow warbler, and this is the male yellow warbler, told from the female by the obvious russet or red streaks in its yellow breast, and it's an all-yellow warbler, the only all-yellow warbler of this area. This is the female yellow warbler. Notice that it is not as brilliant, and also that it doesn't have the obvious red streaking on its breast. Notice that both the male and the female have been at this nest, and they're both taking care of feeding the young. This is not a real common feature of birds. Most times it's just the female taking care of, but that's not always true, and it's nice to see both of them helping out because it makes it a lot easier on the birds all the way around. Yellow warblers are very common in the valley. One seems to nest almost annually in the cottonwood, the large black cottonwood, beside Lodge 6. Here's a picture of the Swainson's thrush. Normally the Swainson's thrush that we see in the valley seem to be higher up in the trees and to sing early mornings and late evenings. Like a lot of thrushes, it has spots or round spots on its breast, and this thrush can only be confused in the valley with the hermit thrush, which I do not have a slide of, but the difference is that the Swainson's thrush has more of a brown back, and the hermit's thrush, which has all similar markings except it's more of a reddish brown, almost a rusty colored back, and the hermit thrush prefers to be on the low vegetative forest ground, and you can often see it flying, but it never very seldom will go higher than 6 feet, and I've always seen it on the ground around the valley. Other thrushes of the valley are the varied thrush, which prefers high elevations in the summer. Your chances of seeing and hearing the varied thrush are quite good up at Holden Lake. Make sure you listen to the recording of its song, because once you've heard it, you can't mistake it for any other thrush or any other bird. And also the American robin is a very common thrush of the valley, a common yard bird throughout the United States. And the other species we have in the thrush family is the Townsend solitaire, which we have two pairs that we've seen this spring, one near the Salt Lick and one up in the Miner's Village. And that's a real treat because you don't see the Townsend solitaire very frequently. A smaller bird, about the size of a chickadee, just maybe a hair bigger, is the pine siskin. It has a streaked breast, it has yellow markings on its wing, which aren't so evident here, and it's very friendly. Oftentimes it reminds me most of the English or house sparrow, because they seem to always be in groups of 16 or 6 to 16 and have the same kind of sound as a house sparrow when they're flying. They kind of just go chip, chip, chirp, or whatever it is. Excuse me. And very friendly, often feeding in the lawns of Holden Village and often seen in the compost area. Another of our woodland warblers is the yellow rump warbler. This is the Audubon race. The yellow rump warbler is a clumping of the Audubon warbler and the myrtle warbler. And the only difference between these two warblers is that the Audubon warbler has a yellow marking under its bill on its bib area, and the myrtle warbler has a white marking in that area. Otherwise, they both have a yellow rump, which you cannot see clearly because this particular slide, the bird has its wings folded over the yellow rump, and a yellow spot on its on the nape of its head, on the top of its head. This bird can be seen most frequently in the miners' village. Another good place to look for this warbler is the trail that goes from Lodge 6 to Narnia following Railroad Creek. The best place in the valley that I have found for bird watching is Miner's Village, and that's because you have a transition zone from forest into a clearing that's perhaps 15 years old, so it's not really thickets yet, but not so clear that birds don't appreciate it. So you'll see a lot of birds if you go in that area, and that is an especially good area for warbler watching. Before I discuss this bird, I forgot to mention three other warblers that are common in the valley are Townsend's warbler, Wilson's warbler, and McGilvery's warbler. And check your field guide, please, for their identification marks. This little fella is the winter wren, and I really admire these little guys. They have a beautiful little song, and they're so small, but they seem to fare real well in the valley. They're especially numerous up around the beaver ponds on the way to Heart Lake. Small birds that like the ground. We also have quite a number of flycatchers in the valley, and I've had trouble identifying some of them. We have a lot of ornithologists have trouble identifying the flycatchers in the genus Epidonax, and that is a very difficult genus to distinguish, and that is what the least flycatcher is a member of, and this is a least flycatcher. They all have a couple of white wing bars on their wings. They all have some type of an eye ring and the same coloration, the male and the female. They can be differentiated by the song once you've worked at observing them long enough. Here's another flycatcher, very similar. This is the alder flycatcher. There is also a willow flycatcher and a Hammond's flycatcher in the valley that all look very similar, but can be told apart sometimes by habitat, sometimes by the way they act, and most often by their song. So if you see one of these flycatchers, you're probably safe just putting down Epidonax flycatcher, or listen to the tape and try to use that to help you distinguish. Another flycatcher of the valley, but not so difficult to differentiate, is the olive-sided flycatcher. Notice the white on its breast and the very few markings on its head, and it has a very definitive song, so if you listen to the tape again, you'll be able to tell this flycatcher. Another one of our woodpeckers is the common flicker. Used to be called the red-shafted flicker, but started to breed with the yellow-shafted flicker and the gilded flicker, quite a combination, so they've called them the common flickers. But the race that's in this valley is the red-shafted, told by the red shaft in its wing. You can see just a glint of it there. And during breeding season, they put on quite a display by fanning their tail, showing a lot of red in their tail. A very common woodpecker of the area, seen often in the area behind Lodge 6 in the village center close to the creek. Another woodpecker of the valley is the yellow-bellied sapsucker. It doesn't actually have a yellow belly, and I'm not sure how it got its name, but it's a very easy woodpecker to tell because it has red under its on its chin and red on its forehead, and is a very small woodpecker, about the size of a downy woodpecker. Now, the yellow-bellied sapsucker is unique in its food-getting habits in that it will pick a young sapling, and it seems to prefer a mountain ash in this valley, and it will drill a series of holes, very similar to a cribbage board. Then sap will ooze out of these holes and attract insects. The yellow-bellied sapsucker will return a little bit later to collect these insects. That is great for the woodpecker, but not so great for the tree, because when it rains later on in the fall, the holes become saturated, and then if it freezes, the ice will expand, and that will cause frost damage to the tree, and usually that branch will break off and do quite a number on that tree. Another woodpecker of the valley is the pileated woodpecker. Not so common, but it certainly is here. I've spotted it on the trail from Holden Village to Lucerne on the Railroad Creek Trail, and there was a woman here this spring who spotted a pair of them behind Lodge 6. A fairly large woodpecker and very obvious if you see it. Well worth seeing. Very few people, I think, actually have seen the pileated woodpecker. Another jay beside the stellar jay that we have in the valley is the gray jay, also called camp robber by early trappers and miners because of its habit of coming around to camp whenever they were having breakfast, and they would throw it pieces of bacon or bread or whatever they had, and it became fairly friendly, but also got the name camp robber. Notice its bill is rather short, and it's kind of a gray bird, and it's very friendly, often found at campsites at Holden Heart and Donkey Lake. A bird that you could possibly confuse with the gray jay is the Clark's Nutcracker, but notice the bill here is long and sharp and pointed. It also has black wings with a white bar there. These are usually at higher elevations than gray jays, and I have seen them at Copper Basin, up around Martin's Ridge, up in the Dole Lake area, and they have quite a call. So once you're familiar with that, whether you see it or not, you'll know it's a Clark's Nutcracker. The chipping sparrow is a favorite sparrow of many, as it stays around while other species pass through. Smaller than others, it's easily told by the russet crown, the white eyebrow line, and a black line through the eye, creating a distinctive three-color pattern. The chipping sparrow is very common in the miners' village and the jacuzzi area. Another sparrow of our valley is the fox sparrow. There are two races of this sparrow, the western race and the eastern race. Here in Railroad Creek Valley, we see the eastern race, which has a slate-colored head rather than the rusty brown head of the western race. The fox sparrow looks similar to a song sparrow in that it has a heavily streaked breast with a central dark spot. The key characteristics which differentiate the fox from the song sparrow are its more heavily striped breast, a much rustier colored tail, and a lower yellow mandible or beak. The song sparrow's beak, top and bottom, is one color, dark brown to gray-black. Other sparrows migrating through the valley, and for which we have no slides, are the song sparrow, Harris sparrow, Lincoln sparrow, Savannah sparrow, and both golden-crowned and white-crowned sparrows. The golden-crowned sparrows have been seen in the miners' village. White-crowned sparrows seem to prefer the higher elevations and have been seen at Copper Basin and in the Heart Lake area. One of the most attractive birds in the valley is the western tanager. The color pattern of the male, seen here, is quite distinctive and is the only tanager with wing bars. Its call is four notes and a pause, four notes and a pause, etc., and very similar to a robin's. So if you hear a robin-like call but with many pauses, look hard for the bird singing this song and you'll be rewarded with the beautiful and colorful sight of a western tanager. This bird is commonly seen in both the miners' village and Holden Village proper in the summertime. The black-headed grosbeak is a bird you'll most likely see on the Heart Lake and lower Holden Lake trails, but may also be an occasional visitor to Holden Village. Notice the short, heavy beak for which it is named. The color pattern of black head, rusty orange breast, and black wings with white wing bars is suggestive of perhaps orioles, but we don't have the problem of distinguishing between these birds here because orioles are not found in this valley. One of the blackbirds of the valley is the brewer's blackbird, but it seems to be found only in the spring when some snow is still on the ground, yet grasses are beginning to grow. The iridescent all-black head and body and the yellow eyes of the male distinguish this bird from the black-eyed brown-headed cowbird. Grackles are not found in the valley, so create no confusion in identifying this, the Brewer's blackbird. We also have red-winged blackbirds found around the beaver ponds and marshes near Heart Lake. The blue grouse is the most common grouse of the valley and is easily recognized by its courtship drum. This grouse has a light gray band at the tip of a longish black tail. The blue grouse may be confused with the spruce grouse, except the latter are not found in this valley. The spruce grouse is darker and has a shorter tail, which either terminates in a red band or has white spots at the base of the tail. Please refer to your field guide when identifying these two grouse where their ranges overlap. Whereas the blue grouse prefers conifer forests, the ruff grouse pictured here is more likely to be found in mixed evergreen and deciduous woodlands of our valley floor. Note the heavy mottling in shades of red-brown to gray-brown, which camouflage this bird in its habitat. The field guide describes the male's drumming as a muffled thumping, starting out slowly and accelerating to a whir, reminding one of a distant motor starting up. The tail markings of this grouse is a distinctive characteristic. The base is a brown to gray color, lighter than a blue grouse, and has a sharply defined wide black band near its tip. This is a slide of a California quail, and the tape here was quite garbled. I'm not sure, but it was found, or at least a habitat common to the California quail, was near a concession stand, perhaps down at Lucerne. It's not there now. Also perhaps at Stehekin. The habitat is dry, dusty areas among broken chaparral and woodland edges. This quail has a black throat, scaled belly feathers, and a question mark shaped black plume curving forward from the crown. This quail's range includes Washington, as does the mountain quail, but records indicate no recent sightings of the mountain quail in our area. The mountain quail may be distinguished from the California quail by a brown throat, white wing bars on its sides, and a long straight head plume, kind of sticking straight up. The belted kingfisher is becoming more common in the valley, perhaps because Railroad Creek is slowly recovering from the effects of the tailings, and there are more trout fry on which the kingfisher feeds. Two nesting pairs have been spotted, one down at Lucerne and one just west or upstream from the road bridge here in Holden. Be sure to look for this beautiful long-billed, bushy-crested blue-gray bird in these areas. It's quite fascinating to watch their flying and feeding habits, and may keep you entertained for many, many minutes. This many may recognize as Minnesota's official state bird, the common loon. Certainly more beautiful and, unfortunately, less plentiful than the unofficial state bird, the mosquito. You'll occasionally spot the common loon on Hart and Domke lakes, and quite a bit more frequently on Lake Chelan, where it nests. Its call is melancholy to some and serene and peaceful to others. If you've not heard its undeniable beauty, I encourage you to listen to the tape of its call. Loons most often sing at dawn and dusk. Many owls are found in the valley, perhaps more than we realize. The best place for owl watching is down in the Domke Lake area. Often you'll not see them, but rather will hear their hooting. Listen carefully, and when you return, listen to the tape of bird calls we have here. You might identify the pygmy owl, seen here. First identified by its hoot down at Nine Mile Creek. The large yellow eyes reveal the daylight hunting habits of this owl. It's one of three or four owls of Washington which hunt by day. Another of these is the great horned owl. We've now gone from one of the smallest to one of the largest owls common in the West. The great horned owl is the only large North American owl with ear tufts, or horns. It's also the most common owl of the valley and has been spotted near Chalet Circle and elsewhere along the valley floor. Again, this owl hunts by sight at dawn and dusk and at night, taking advantage of moonlight. The largest North American owl is the great gray owl. Its round head, lack of ear tufts, and noticeable black chin spot are its distinguishing characteristics. Note the proportionately large facial discs and small yellow eyes. You can't tell by this slide, but they are yellow. In addition to the yellow eyes, another identifier for this owl is its deep, low hoot. The facial discs of this owl and others, such as the very common barn owl, function as sound collectors and actually funnel the sound of its prey to its ears. These owls hunt more by sound than by sight and therefore actively feed at night. Ornithologists also suspect these owls may use their facial discs to echolocate, much like bats do. At 6 or 7 inches in length, this rare owl is slightly smaller than pygmy or screech owls. This, the flambulated owl, is the only North American owl with dark eyes. Because of the rarity of this owl in the Pacific Northwest, if you spot one, please contact the Forest Service or your nearest Audubon Society. They're very interested in mapping the flammulated owl's population and spread in the Northwest. This is a great shot of an osprey, a bird you're most certain to see on an overnight to Dom Key Lake. A pair have been breeding there for at least 3 years, and you may spot their nest of sticks, or eyrie, in a tall snag at the northwest end of the lake. This pair has been known to raise 3 young each year. Ospreys are the only hawk that dive into water, plunging feet first to catch fish. Unlike bald eagles, ospreys are finicky and will only eat fresh-caught fish. Dom Key Lake's abundance of trout undoubtedly contributes to the ospreys laying a 3-egg clutch year after year. Here's a slide of an immature golden eagle, and note the sharply banded tail with white at its base and a dark brown black at the tip. A breeding pair has been seen near Heart Lake, and one recent fall both the parents and young were seen soaring over Heart Lake. You might also see it around Martin's Ridge. Golden eagles prefer open mountains, foothills, and canyons, and chiefly eat large rodents. We end with this last slide, a shot from below of an adult bald eagle. Bald eagle is our national bird. They might be seen on Railroad Creek, the Stehekin River, and Lake Chelan. Not as finicky, bald eagles eat dead or dying fish. The immatures may be confused with the golden eagle, and actually only after 3 or 4 years do the tail and head feathers turn the white that you see here. For the immature bald and golden eagles, please refer to your field guide for identifying characteristics. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this program on birds in Holden in the Railroad Creek Valley. To help in your bird watching and identification, there are tapes of bird calls keyed to specific pages in Roger Torrey Peterson's A Field Guide to Western Birds.
Enjoy your bird watching at Holden Village and the Railroad Creek Valley.